separate contributions, even from Marvel. Not that Marvel has them anyway. We figured we're going to have to make this a totally grassroots campaign, right? So we're sending out campaign literature to people who sent us stamped self-addressed envelopes, and we're asking them to do things like hold old benefit car washes and things, right, for the duck, and then take whatever proceeds they have and donate them to the Audubon Society or the National Wildlife Federation, who are interested in preserving American waterfowl, that sort of thing. And, just marching around their local radio and TV stations with placards until they get on the evening news, letter-writing campaigns to the League of Women Voters demanding to know why Howard was not invited to participate in the debates, that sort of thing.
Have you gotten any concrete responses to these pleas?
Well, we know we got 3 votes in the Oregon primary, right?
Oh, and, I didn't know. I hadn't heard that.
And at least 11 pledges up there. This was pre-convention, 11 pledges up there if Ford and Carter were the nominees. So, I think there's going to be a substantial number of write-in votes.
Is there any connection between Howard the Duck in your mind and what seems to be a duck craze that's a disco duck kind of manifests the... there's no, obviously no connection, or is there?
I don't think there's obviously a connection. I wonder sometimes if the mania over Howard isn't what spurred on a lot of these other things,
What sort of reaction have you gotten from the traditional media? I understand you were on, is it WBAI-FM?
Right, which is hardly what you'd call traditional.
Yes, I know. I'm thinking in terms of...
The listener-sponsored station here.
Yeah.
And the reaction from people listening to that station was, very, very positive. We still haven't gotten any coverage on NBC, CBS, or ABC, but we're waiting. They're not knocking down our doors yet, but... McCarthy is having the same problem, and we can wait him out as long as he can. I don't know. Most of the media that have covered the phenomenon, have been very enthusiastic, not only about the excitement generated by the duck, but also by the product, for lack of a better word, itself. The Village Voice reviewed the book in their scenes column and gave it a very, very positive review. Soho Weekly News, I think, did a piece on it. St. Louis Post-Dispatch wrote about it. Not the Cleveland Plain Dealer, but in fact, the Detroit Free Press is the one I'm thinking of. Also did a long article on Howard with, again, very, very positive, statements about it.
I guess Marvel is now coming out with a line of funny animal comics, too. I assume that has something at least partially to do with Howard's success.
Well, actually, that's an idea that Roy Thomas proposed about 2 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It just never got off the ground then, and I think probably now you come back to the same words over and over again, the enthusiasm, the excitement about Howard, maybe it was just kind of an added impetus to go ahead with it finally. But these are straight funny animal books of the Gold Key and Harvey and Archie type. They're not, they're not replicas of Howard at all.
Right, I was aware of that. Howard the Duck, I know, made his first appearance in Man-Thing 19, and of course, I'd like to compliment you. Personally, I've enjoyed those for a long time. The Man-Thing was a fine series. And, what was the inspiration? Why did you decide, in the midst of all this other weirdness, to toss in a duck who kind of resembles
that? That was the problem. I needed a joke to top a barbarian with a sword jumping out of a jar of peanut butter, right? And the duck was the only thing that came to me. The creation of Howard the Duck took about a second and a half, after about 30 minutes of pondering what to have walk out of those bushes, once it was there, it was just there. It came as a full-blown idea, a full-blown personality, and I knew immediately after seeing Val Myrick's initial drawings of the character that it was really a character. It was not just a, four-panel joke or something.
What other writing are you doing besides? I know you're working for Marvel just on Howard now. What other projects do you have, or is the campaign full-time?
The campaign is taking up a lot of time. I'm also working on putting together a book now, which will be collected writings by people in the comics, about the comics, and also some contributions from artists as well. And then, too, I'm working on a collection of short stories. These are still fairly long-range projects.
No publisher, no contracts involved.
Well, we have a publisher interested in the first one, in the nonfiction book, but nothing yet on the short stories.
Is there any contract beside? Can you tell me which publisher that is?
No.
Okay.
At this point, I can't.
Okay. Can you be specific and tell me how much money, how many buttons have been sold, for instance, and how much money has come into the campaign?
I can tell you how many buttons have been printed.
Okay.
let's see, we've done about 15,000. We printed about 15,000 buttons. Now, in terms of the money, don't let that, you know, the guy has made $15,000.
No, well, yeah.
Right, immediately, you know, there's the cost of the buttons, and also a large, large number of those, almost half, well over half probably, have been sold at wholesale rates, you know, quite a bit less than $1 a button, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know how much money we've made off of it.
Yeah, and yet you are making some sort of profit, I take it.
Pardon me?
You are making some sort of profit.
Well, since having been cut back on all those books, I've been living off the button. That's true.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it's barely been enough for that, but, you know, yeah.
After the campaign, what happens to Steve Gerber and to Howard the Duck?
Well, Howard, I don't want to be too specific about this, but Howard's campaign is sabotaged. And as a result, he has to fly to a, you know, foreign country to clear his name. I don't want to specify again too much about that. I want it to come as a surprise to people. But shortly after that, in the tradition of Man-Thing and now Mary Hartman, he's headed direct for a nervous breakdown. I don't want to say too much more about this too, but also as a result of that, and as a result of where his, you know, mental condition eventually places him, we're going to write the final, absolute, no kidding, 100% forever ending of World War II in the comic books.
that's pretty bizarre. I guess they have to
well,
remember
yeah, I mean,
that.
We've been criticized a lot for continuing to fight, you know, World War II, about 30 years after it was over, you know, with all the war books and the Red Skull and villains like that, you know. But we're finally going to come to the end of that.
No, it's just in Howard the Duck. I assume Captain America will continue to meet the Red Skull every once in a while.
Well, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, if he does, it'll, you know, it's a grudge match already. The war will definitely be over after this story, for sure.
Any other projects as far as the comics go, kicking around in your mind?
Well, there's still the kind of ever-up-in-the-air Kiss magazine, you know, based on the rock group Kiss that I was supposed to edit and write, but that seems to be tied up in contractual hassles, and I don't know at what stage that project is right now, you know. We've been trying to get it off the ground, we meaning me, for about, it seems like 4 or 5 months now, and it's still kind of lagging around, you know, waiting for somebody to sign something, you know.
If now speaking to the uninitiated in our audience who know absolutely nothing about Howard the Duck, how would you detail Howard's campaign and entice them maybe to vote for Howard?
Well, Howard is running an activist campaign. He has although he is an American citizen, he comes from another dimension, and this I think gives him a more objective point of view on our, you know, situation here in these United States. Howard's campaign, I think, is primarily centered around enhancing the quality of life, right? And doing away with anything that diminishes the quality of life in any way. I don't know. We could mention a few of the things he's done, you know, like his proposal for a course in advanced self-mortification for manufacturers of bottles, non-returnable bottles and cans, so that they can be let out onto the streets to eat them, right? Or his proposal for recycling greasy hamburger wrappers left out on the street, you know, which is to have the makers of these things wear them as disposable paper suits, you know, things like that, you know, various positions like that.
That's fascinating. Can you hold on for just a second? My tape's running out, and I've got to add some more. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Real sorry to keep you waiting, Steve. You can never find a good empty reel when you need one. This is not so much for the popular audience as it is for my own benefit. Now Jerry Conway. Well, what now that Jerry Conway's leaving? Is there any possibility you'll be taking over the Defenders again?
It's been mentioned. I don't know if I'll even want to, if I will, but. It's been mentioned as a possibility.
Uh-huh. Just between you and me, I miss your script.
Right.
I get in all the points I can here. Now, has Jerry Conway resolved the Elf subplot?
No, that still remains to be dealt with, and I'll do it if we get back to the book, you know, if I do go back to it.
In the event, can you reveal anything at this point as to...
Yeah, I can reveal that I know absolutely nothing about it. that whole thing came about as a joke, you know. Sal Buscema was sick of drawing Sons of the Serpent outfits, and I was sick of writing a dumb dialogue for them. So in the last chapter of that four-part series, we just threw in that page as a gag, you know, to give us both a little respite from that, you know, hero-villain conflict thing. And naturally, I should know already by now not to do these things anymore, because it's become the biggest thing to happen in that book, probably in 2 or 3 years, you know. People got extremely curious and extremely, anxious to know what the whole thing was about. And I don't know, you know, so I've just been going along, moving him sort of across the country from west to east, dropping clues, and eventually I hope I'll drop enough of them that I'll be able to figure out what he is, you know.
Now,
it's a backwards mystery.
You had some idea at the time when you introduced it that you'd have to elaborate on it in one time.
Actually, no, I didn't. I really thought we'd just drop it in there, never mention it again, and it would be one of the great unsolved mysteries of Marvel Comics. and we'd just leave it that way, but, you know. The readers decreed otherwise.
Yeah. This is the interview I'm performing with you now is for a show we have called Probe, which is a 5-minute mini documentary that goes on twice on Mondays, once a week. And I just like to get a little bit of background biography on you. You're in your 20s, I know that much, but I don't know your exact age.
Just turned 29 on September 20th.
Uh-huh.
So I was born in 1947 and grew up in St. Louis until the time I was 22. And at that point moved to New York and went to work for Marvel Comics. Graduated from University City High School. My whole schooling was in the University City Public Schools.
Mm-hmm.
And went to the University of Missouri at St. Louis for 2 years, Mizzou at Columbia for one semester, and finished up my bachelor's and my yet unfinished master's at St. Louis University.
Uh-huh. And... No, have you done any other? You've been writing for Marvel since you were 22.
Right.
Have you done any writing? Have you done any other writing besides?
No, it would have been 24.
24 then?
22, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you done any? You're working on a series of short stories. Have you had any writing published and appearing elsewhere?
I've done a few articles here and there. Rolling Stone bought something from me and never published it. I don't know why. A long article on the Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster thing. And I've written for Super 8 filmmaker and, you know, a couple of other.
I saw that. I remember seeing that article. Yeah. And how about your? I guess to complete the thing, how about marital status or other relationships like that?
Huh? Yeah, I'm between wives.
All right. Well, that's all right. We probably won't even mention that. I just.
Okay.
Any other thoughts in your mind as to, you know, Howard the Duck, the comics scene in general, or the country maybe in general,
wow.
The campaign? How about the comments on some of the other candidates? That might be it.
How about what?
The comments on the two so-called major candidates, or four.
You know, it's like the reason I think people should support Howard is that we're down now to a choice between a very well-oiled peanut and a Grand Rapids rattle trap, right? And they seem to prove themselves more of what they are each and every day, you know, and Howard, I think, is the one viable candidate. It's, you know, if it comes down to a choice between a loon, a turkey, and a duck, you know, what do you do?
Yep, that's the slogan so far, is get the turkeys out, put the duck in.
Right.
All right, how about the comics in general? There have been some problems, of course, with price and, I guess, DC now. Do you know anything about, does Marvel have any plans to follow DC's lead on the 100-page books?
Into the dollar books.
The dollar books, yeah.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything about that.
Okay. Are the comics, in your evaluation, in a healthy state?
No, and they haven't been for about 2 decades.
Right.
No, I think, if anything, the comics are kind of a dying industry. It's kind of a shame in some ways, but I think primarily because, except for an occasional weird innovation like Howard, there have been others, you know. They haven't kept pace with the society outside, you know. And we're still writing to kids of the 1950s, you know. And I could go on for 2 hours about this if you really want it.
Well, feel free to go on for at least a few more minutes.
Well, okay. Where do we begin with the problems? All right. The conception of publishers of their audience, you know, is generally, well, it starts at about age 12, right? You know, and runs up through, you know, who knows, septuagenarians already. But the problem is that the 12-year-olds, when they consider makeup most of their market, are much, much brighter than they believe them to be. Their conception of a 12-year-old is actually more like a 6-year-old out in the real world, and these are the people they're writing to. Now, as a result, even a contemporary 12-year-old, I think, is largely turned off to a lot of the stuff in the comics because it's beneath them, really. Certain things have come along. You know, I only have to mention Warlock, Doctor Strange, Howard, you know, books like this that have, you know, given the kids a jumping-off place once they're tired of the, you know, 6 pages of fight every 3 pages, you know, in the books, to move into some other kind of storytelling, some other kind of subject matter. But that those books are dying because the publishers really don't know how to promote them and don't know how to reach an older audience. So by the time you get through all the hassles of, you know, creative people leaving because of the pay scales in the industry, you know, the publisher's own prejudices and misconceptions about the audience, the complete unwillingness to spend money promoting the books, getting them out onto the stand, you know, getting the names of the characters before the public, I don't know. It's like trying to peddle, I don't know what, crazy glue in a wheelbarrow or something, been down the streets of New York and make $1 million. You know, doesn't work.
Wrong packaging. The wrong packaging.
Yes, yeah, I think.
Is there any hope? What kind of hope do you see for the industry?
Unless there are some major changes in the consciousness of the people who hold the purse strings, I really don't see much, if any.
Uh-huh.
I think they're going to prejudice themselves right out of existence, basically. You know, assume themselves right out of existence. This is the only magazine industry I know that does no demographic studies, has no idea really who its audience is, but has an incredible body of theory, you know, built up about what sells and what doesn't and what we can promote and what the retailers will take and what the distributors want, but there's no proof, absolutely no statistics, no real attempts at fact-finding to back it up, just all these people with their assumed expertise, you know.
That's really, there are no studies. The closest, I guess, they've come have been the surveys that Marvel and DC have run through the years.
That's right, which are completely unreliable.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
kind of surprised
at that. There's no way to judge what sort of a sample you're getting.
And yet it is quite an industry. I mean, there's the money. There's a lot of money involved.
Not that much, surprisingly.
No?
Not that much. Most of the money is involved not in the publishing as much as in the licensing of the characters. You know,
yeah.
The Superman lunchboxes and the Howard the Duck t-shirts or whatever, or the... you know, the Conan posters or belt buckles or whatever they're doing this week, you know.
Yeah. Getting back to Howard, I guess, and feel free to talk about anything else if it comes to mind. Is the Treasury edition on sale in New York?
No, actually, we just got back our printer's proofs of it, which means it should be on the stands in about, I'd say, probably 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay. Do you think that's a format that offers much, that large size? Does that offer much hope?
I think it's an awkward size, which is primarily the problem with it. I think they're going to have to find something they can package at around that price in order to, you know, compete for magazine space with things like Playboy and Hustler and, you know, these other books. But I don't know if that's the size, really.
Yeah. Let me just backtrack one question. What did you say your experience was at the University of Missouri of St. Louis? What was your experience? What was your degree? What was your work there?
I did my first 2 years of college. I did it at UMSL, and then one semester at Mizzou, Columbia, and then got my BA from St. Louis U.
In what?
Communications with a minor in creative writing.
I guess anything else you'd like to add? Feel free to say anything on your mind. What a forum.
Actually, I've got to go shave.
All right. that's okay, too.
I don't know. I would hope that... No, actually, I have absolutely nothing profound to add, and I think that's maybe the best thing I can say to your listeners.
That's fine. Well, listen, Steve, keep up the good work. I personally add my hope that you return to do the Defenders, and the Guardians of the Galaxy would be nice, too. Keep up the good work. Have a good campaign. Oh, there is one other thing.
Yes.
Now, I wrote you a letter. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek when I wrote it to you over the summer. I wrote it to the campaign address. I don't know whether you ever saw it or not. Asking whether there was a possibility that you'd be interested in... working with the station here and to give away some of those buttons as a promotional sort of thing. That probably wouldn't be profitable for you.
You know, we've been spending an awful lot of money promoting the thing.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, to say no to a request for a few buttons to use like this would be, you know, I mean, blatantly dumb on our part. Yeah, if you want to give them away.
I'd love to.
Would you like to have about 25 of them or something?
Oh, fine. I give them away on my show every morning.
Yeah.
Should I give you the address?
Please do. Hang on, let me get the paper here. Okay, sure, go ahead.
Okay, my name is Charlie Meyerson, M-E-Y-E-R-S-O-N. And the station's address is 1241 South Euclid, E-U-C-L-I-D.
Right.
And we're in Champaign, Illinois, C-H-A-M-P-A-I-G-N. The zip code is 61820.
61820. Okay, and what is the name of the station?
Okay, WPGU.
WPGU-FM.
Progressive rock, the best rock around. And let's see. Now, if you have a chance, I wouldn't mind receiving some of those bulletins here. I've got my button. I ordered my button already, but I haven't been getting the campaign bulletins. If you could send those here, I'd be glad to read those over the air too. All right. Well, listen. Thanks a lot. If you can pick us up, this will probably go on the air Monday morning.
I doubt it.
I doubt it too, in New York.
Not if I'm at this range.
Yeah, that's right. Well, listen. Thanks a lot, Steve, for your time and good luck.
All right.
Okay. Goodbye.
Okay.